You take a mind that is completely its own genius, and you try to put it in school and tell it to learn other things.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
There's different groups like the ABC, Association for Bright Children, but nobody seems to be aware of homeschooling or unschooling as an option.
You know, a lot of people live in the paradigm that their child grows up and by the time they're a certain age, they go to school. So then they try to find answers within that. People do that all the time. They don't think outside the paradigm of what they assume is just reality. Recently, because I'm trying to answer some parents' questions about baby and toddler care, I looked on some sites that parents chat, and somebody would ask, like, how do I get my child to sleep through the night and to stay in their crib? And nobody says, don't. Why are you trying to do that? He insists on sleeping with me. Well, what's wrong with that? You will get 20 answers from other parents telling all kinds of tricks of how to get the child to stay in the crib. All kind of tricks how to stop them from nursing. All kind of tricks how to get them out of diapers or to stop them from tantruming. Or, you know, and not a single person, once in a while there is a brave soul that says, well, you know, I've tried to just let them be. And that's the same as what you're saying about gifted children in school. They're inside that paradigm. They don't think about, well, maybe just not go to school.
What is gained from not sending your gifted child to school?
I think everything is gained. Talent and giftedness. And I want to talk about it first in the broadest sense. It's not necessarily, what I'm going to say is not only true for prodigy children. There are like degrees. Everybody has some gift, something they're talented. And how good they're going to really flourish in that direction and really actualize themselves has to do with their freedom to be. If they feel free, they may even go to school and succeed to go on with their talent. If they have freedom to be themselves and to follow their own call. But if the baby cries, and that's why I say that's where it starts, and the message we give them is what you're crying about is wrong. You shouldn't have your thumb in your mouth, or you shouldn't come to mommy's bed, or you shouldn't nurse so much, or you shouldn't be crying, or whatever it is. If the message is constantly off struggling against the baby and then the toddler, then he loses his freedom, because what he gets is this internal endless motion, who I am and what's coming out from me is wrong. I shouldn't be listening to me. I should be listening to authority and to forces outside of me and try to please them and try to live and be that person they want me to be. Now, go and try to be the person somebody wants you to be and see how successful you are, how confident you feel. You know, it's like you become extremely insecure because you have no way of knowing. If you don't trust your inner voice and you have to guess the inner voice of the teacher, the counselor, the society, the parent, then you're like walking on eggshells and you lose your freedom. So that freedom I'm talking about starts with that full respect and trust in the baby, in the young child. That's what they want to do. It's what they need to do and what is right for them. Now, I tell you, you know, parents, and I've worked with thousands of parents personally and in workshops, the parents who from the beginning respect the baby and flow with the baby the way they are, and the toddler then and the young child, generally they're unlikely to send that kid to school. That doesn't flow, okay, regardless of prodigy or not prodigy. Now, the children who have some prodigal talent, if they're they're sent to school. And if they didn't have that kind of freedom, then the school keeps telling them every day, the message is, don't follow your own thing, or not as much of the day, because there's all these other subjects you must learn. And basically, you know, diverting a genius away for themselves. I mean, can you imagine Mozart in a school? You know, it's like they would have killed a genius, and we would have missed so much music that he was writing every day as a child. Can you imagine if Edison's mother wasn't smart enough to pull him out of there? Or Einstein, you know, you take a mind that is completely its own genius, and you try to put it in school and tell it to learn other things. Also, the way of thinking that school teaches, where, you know, I'll teach you how to think and do it this way and do it that way. You know, one of my children is quite prodigal in math, and I made sure to not teach him any rules of how you do it. And when he was about 6 or 7, he was adding numbers with 7 to 11 digits. And he was adding them accurately and then checking it on the computer to see that he's right or no. And then I said to him, how do you do it? And he was adding them from left to right, not from right to left. And I said to him, how do you do it? What do you do with the extras that really should come from the right to the left? And he explained to me his method. And when he explained to me his method, because he discovered that there is that problem, but he found a solution that was his own invention. And when he explained it to me, that was the first time in my life I really understood why we carry those extras from the right to the left. Because in school, I was taught like a robot, you know, this is what you do, and they give some explanation. It never clinked, because I never got it. When you go from the left to the right, you face the problem head on. He invented his method. So that process, and my point of the freedom that he had here, he invented his own process, which gave his brain the capacity to invent methods of learning, methods of figuring out stuff, which develops genius. If he went to school, the school teaches them how it goes, as if there is a one way how it goes. If he went to school, they would have taught him to add numbers, and he would have never created this invention of how to add numbers his way, which probably opened a whole department of thinking that would have never opened. Same with music. 2 of my 3 children are musical prodigies. I didn't send them to music teachers until they asked for it. One of them at age 3 went to the piano and figured out Bach by ear. He asked me to show him the left hand, which is not some chords accompanying. When it comes to Bach, it's called counterpoint, which means the left hand plays as complicated and unrelated in rhythm, in a way, melody. So putting it together is really a mathematical quiz. And yet I showed it to him just a couple of times. He learned it. He put it together. He moved it from key to key. He crossed hands. He learned more pieces like this. So, you know, if I took him to a teacher, they would have been doing with him all these rhythm exercises and teaching him to read notes and counting and clapping. First of all, he would have been bored. Secondly, probably he would have been robbed off doing it his own way. This kid learned everything backward. Normally, this particular kid would have been taken to speech therapy, because he was almost 3 before he uttered a single word, because he's a perfectionist. He had to figure it out complete, and then one day he spoke in long, complete sentences, no baby accent, 2 languages. But by normal thinking, I should have taken him to a speech therapy and see if there's something wrong. That freedom where he knows what I think and what I want to do is right. That's the main thing that schooling really is hampering and can really, I don't want to be sound too dramatic, but it destroys it. It can destroy. I mean, depending on what parents do at home, ideally the solution, and a lot of parents whose gifted children go to school call me, and it's very problematic. So the teachers don't understand, and he wants to be all day at home doing this, and he wants to compose, or he wants to do his experiments, and he's not listening in class, or he's actually, a lot of them disturb because they're so bored. Yeah. They're trouble kids. And the other kids don't like them. They're nerds, and they're really wonderful kids. They're also smart with how to aggravate the teacher and how to aggravate the other students and how to do this and how to do that, and they're bored to death in class, so they're, you know, doing all these other things, and sometimes they're being put in special class for disabled, believe it or not. So what a struggle for the teachers, what to do with this oddball who seems to be disabled, who seems to be genius, who disturbing, who is making so much trouble. You take them, and I tell the parents, have you tried to just keep him at home? Does he want to go to school? No, he hates school a lot of the time. He likes this one or two friends. So, well, keep the friend, try part-time school, not go to school. I had one client who was also in music, and the school was completely supportive that he get up every morning and practice as much as he wants, and then he can come to school if there is any time left of the day. And some days he didn't go at all, and some days he went, you know, half day. He'd get up in the morning, and he's practicing a few hours, and then he'll go to school after lunch or something. And that worked for a few years. I'm not saying there's, like, one solution or the only solution, but it's really important for parents to understand that the mind works best in freedom and in self-trust, that the child must know the way I want to learn is the right way for me and what I want to pursue is right for me. I'll give you another example within music of my children, because even within a certain subject, I take my children when they ask to, but not before, to music teachers, right? They start lessons. One child is completely into performance, already doing solos with orchestras at age 10, you know, winning competitions against adults, like really sensational, you know, videos and full concerts of his own on two instruments, conducting, composing, all kinds of stuff. So everybody thinks, you know, that's a star. The other one's just as talented, the one that I told you that played Bach by ear at age 3. He wants violin lessons, piano lessons. He's not practiced. Doesn't interest him to accomplish practicing, to accomplish performance, to polish pieces. He's into something else. The teachers are struggling even in a conservatory situation, so it's not just a school. Most teachers only know to teach, but teaching doesn't work. To enhance a learning of a prodigy child, or any child for that matter, we need to find how they're learning and just provide. Water the flower, not shape the petals. Even this kid, even though he doesn't go to school, the private teachers of instruments just seem to have a hard time with him. Because, no, I don't want to practice. I just want to be exposed, know how the instrument works. Then he comes home, he sits at the computer, and in one afternoon he writes a movement of a symphony. So I, as a mother who is following that freedom, I say to him, I don't care if you play violin and piano, it doesn't matter. Well, he wants violin because he wants to play in orchestra. He's very attracted to big orchestral and choral music. He listens all day long, transcribes the whole music into piano, like, you know, 15 voices of choral and orchestra, and he transcribes it and writes it on the computer for piano, then he plays it on the piano. The teachers don't want to hear that. They want to work on the repertoire for piano. Fine, yeah. You know, that's what they want to do. Mm-hmm. Then he says, well, then I'm not taking the lessons anymore. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That's like taking a child out of school. But then he fell in love with the lessons with the composition teacher. I say, fine, I'll double your composition lessons. You want to go see this guy? Yeah, I want lots of lessons with him. He's writing and writing and writing, composing. So even private lessons that went in the direction of the child, you have to really watch it, because teachers like to teach, and they like to teach the way they teach. And some of them are more flexible, but still, you know, if you want piano lessons, I want to teach you piano. What parents need to understand is that the whole thing starts at babyhood. You can't, you know, give the message to the baby you shouldn't be crying and stuff a pacifier in their mouth. But it's just one example where people really struggle against the child. There is this constant struggle, and if we let go of the struggle, it's so easy.
She gives me all her love, and all I gotta do is call her love. And I know that by the stars above, she'll chase the blues out of my day. Hey, hey, hey. She gives me all her time, and all I gotta do is call her mine. Then everything will fall in line, and we will find our way. So now tell me, why should I worry about what will be or what has been, when it's all right here before me? All I gotta do is let it in. She gives me all her heart, no need to go searching for the missing part. It's all been there right from the star, never heard to part from me. Tell me, why should I worry about what has been or what will be, when she stands right here before me and she's waiting just for me? She gives me all the time, and all I gotta do is call her mine, then everything will fall in line. We will find our way. Hey, 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 said everything will fall in line. We will find our way.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
The gift of the child can come through because what he knows is what I feel inside is right and where I want to go is right. Even crying, you know, sometimes babies want to cry. Children want to cry, and it's the parent that doesn't want to cry. It hurts them. Sometimes adults want to cry. They're just upset or worn out or overstimulated and need a little good cry. Children do too. And if we tell them, no, you shouldn't be crying, you should always, you know, let me soothe you and stop your crying, then they get the message, I can't trust my own feelings and my own expression. And a lot of prodigal children, you know, the talent is in the arts, in self-expression. If the expression of tears is not allowed, why should I express in poetry or in dance or in art? It's like really important to allow the freedom of self-expression. Again, that one in school is not allowed that much. You have to sit quiet all this time and kind of shut yourself down for the sake of the structure. So at home, it's not only not to send them to school if they don't want to and if it doesn't work for them. It's also to allow that freedom at home, because parents can stifle that freedom just as good. So not going to school doesn't guarantee that the child will flourish. The next thing is, when you're at home, don't do the damage the school does. Make sure the freedom is there, that they can express feelings of all kinds, whether I hate my brother, is a strong feeling that should be expressed. When parents say, no, you don't, you really love them, don't say stuff like that, then the message is, expressing yourself fully is not right. Your feelings are wrong. You know, instead I teach parents, validate the feeling. I know how hard it is to have a brother sometimes. It doesn't mean they really hate them, and it doesn't mean they'll do any harm to them, but at that moment they feel hateful, and it's validating it that teaches them to let feelings out and then move on. So there is lots of factors in allowing genius to flourish. Mm-hmm. Children express their feelings in behavior, even sibling rivalry. Okay, an older, at 4 years old, taking toys out of the hands of a baby or trying to hurt them or pull their hair or something, jealousy, feeling insecure. If we just tell them, don't do that, we're actually not helping either emotionally with the sibling nor with developing of their own self-esteem and self-trust in their own development, including their own genius. So I always say to parents, validate that feeling. I can see you would really like to aggravate your brother. That doesn't mean you approve it. That doesn't mean you don't do something to alleviate the feeling, the self-doubt that comes with jealousy and all of that. I give them more tools to handle that. But the first reaction, always yes to what the child is doing and expressing, and then maybe giving an alternative way to express it. Maybe express it to me in private, draw pictures for me, show me how you would like to get rid of your brother. I understand. Don't have to elaborate, but just let him know it's fine to feel this way. Otherwise, they have this horrible guilt, like, I'm a horrible person. I'm fantasizing, pushing my sister off the cliff. Well, if they know that it's normal to have those fantasies, they can finish the fantasy and move on and not discount the expressions that come to them and their imagination and their creativity, because those fantasies are very creative. My philosophy is really complete freedom. When children are trusted and respected, they are considerate human beings who take other people's needs into account in line with their age. I don't expect an 8-year-old to be as considerate as a 16-year-old. And I find that most of the time parents ask their children to do chores not because they need the help, but because they want to make them do it so they'll learn to do it. Children know that. That's not authentic, not real. That's really teaching, like in school. It's like, I'll make you do it so you'll learn. And what do they learn? If you're bigger, force someone smaller to do what you think they should do. That's what they learn. They also end up hating to wash the dishes because now it's associated with being forced against their will and da-da-da-da-da-da. I'd rather wait till they understand, unless I really need it. You know, I find some single mothers, and here when I'm alone, I'm like a single mother, so I got my two children to help me a bit. But they're helping. And the moment we're back home or my husband is here to help, they don't. And that's fine. They got, okay, you got the help now. You tell them to do the chores because you want to teach them a lesson. Forget about it. But you tell them to, would you help me out? There's just no way I can finish everything today. If you wash the dishes or this is what I needed to do regularly, then they do it. They do it because it's real. It's not you forcing them in order to teach them and make them into a person that knows to do it. So freedom is in every way. But the thing is, when we respect children and treat them respectfully and trust them, they actually have no reason to go against us. They're not struggling to keep their inner self alive because it's allowed to be alive. Their autonomy isn't messed with, because a lot of children who go to school or whose parents aren't as aware of these things, with best of intentions, they try to direct them, even when they're, and that's the next thing I want to talk about also, when you have a prodigy child, some parents get so hooked on the talent, it becomes their project, and the child loses interest because they want it to be their own project, not their mommy project or daddy's project. It's very difficult. I've seen parents who have completely stifled talent because it's like, hey, this is becoming your thing. I'm out. That respect of who the person is generally shows up in children who are content with themselves. They don't have a struggle against anybody because nobody is struggling against them and their direction and their passion. So they're generally very well-behaved children. I actually had a conversation, which I thought I should bring up in this interview, that's really useful, with another mother, my assistant. We talked about what does it. Like, we're moving to a different city so that they have the environment that nurtures their talent, because on the island, it's like they're alone. So we're talking about location and exposure. I always tell in homeschooling conferences when I speak, I say to parents, expose, don't impose. The expose part is really important, and the location or the city or community where we live does make a difference, the environment we live in. So on the one hand, a free child will show their talent no matter what you do. So you can be, you know, like the composer Mendelssohn. Unlike Mozart. Mozart was born to musicians. Bach was born to musicians. Mendelssohn was born to a banker and a housewife. And they didn't think very highly of becoming a musician. And I don't know their parenting style, but what I'm saying, when there is such a prodigy, it pushes right through. So here is a kid that was born to intellectual people and, you know, upper class people, but nothing to do with music. And he pushed right through and became a composer and a pianist. I was thinking in general about this issue, so will my child show me what they want, even if I do nothing? So if I raise my child with the goats and the pigs on the farm, and he is a dancing prodigy or a musical prodigy, will he let me know? And my answer is yes and no. Yes, he'll let you know, but if you are in a jungle in Africa with your child and he's a musical prodigy, then he'll go into drumming African style. He's not going to know anything about classical music, and he's not going to be attracted to a violin or a piano. Or if he's into dance, he will do the African dancing. So if you're Westerners and you want him to be able to actualize himself in the art in this culture, then maybe the farm or village in Africa isn't the place. So in other words, the talent will come through, but the inspiration and the exposure is extremely important. The reason we're leaving a small community that was really wonderful for us for the early years of the children is that there is no nurturing environment for musical talent of the caliber our children are. There's a piano teacher and a violin teacher and all kind of kids who play some beginner things and little things, but my children couldn't play with any of them some real chamber music. They need to play with adults or with other kids who take music this seriously. Uh-huh. Generally, my youngest plays chamber music with adults and teenagers in the conservatory, or the best one. So there is no nurturance. They would be not exposed enough and not getting any support from friends. Like if their friends are all playing volleyball with their friends, and nothing wrong with that. But if there is no get together and play some chamber music or orchestra that connects them, then it's very hard to stay feeling confident about the self. It's really crucial what you expose your child to, because the physiological reality of the human mind is that it can only think up and create what it already knows, not the same as what it already knows. So it definitely, you know, parents need to think not only about whether the child goes to school or not when they're a prodigy, but whatever direction they take. If they're farmers and the child shows extreme prodigial ability in science, they may want to be closer to university, to a place where they would meet other people for whom that's an interesting subject, or else there's not enough echo and resonance in their surrounding to support that it's a viable interest, something to do, especially with the arts. I would say that the prodigal talents in the arts, in dance and music and poetry, those kind of things, they really need the environment even more than they need a good teacher. They need the environment. They need to be in a world where that's valued, and that there are other kids their age doing this thing. Can you imagine if you're with all these kids playing and you're the only one doing it? Then you get the impression you're a freak. And that's part of what happens in the school situation. That's another problem, is they're a freak. They're the only one sitting in the middle of the class humming some composition and writing notes very quick so they won't forget the new composition that came in their head while it's a geography class, or while everybody else is having fun or goes out to recess. So they're made fun of, and then they're bored when there's some other things and they disturb. So it's really crucial to think about what environment your child is in, and the prodigy children, the school environment generally, it has. With prodigy children, I really recommend no TV. I recommend that with all children, to really minimize the exposure to the already made stuff and with all this passive entertainment. Not because of the content as much as the very medium that makes the brain very passive. And I'm not saying none at all. I'm not into extreme. I'm not saying there is no value in some scientific programs that we have seen, but just video, the TV itself, we hardly ever, you know, unless there's the cultural program. But basically, I like to see, especially in the young years, children grow without the passive entertainment where they sit and their brain goes numb and it's all fed into them. That kind of freedom that you gain by teaching yourself and figuring out yourself. I mean, even learning to write or read by Sesame Street, that robs the child of inventing a method to learn. Definitely to enhance creativity and genius, exposure to the subject that it's related, and immerse in society and in a community that's interested in that level of interest. And it doesn't mean that every kid around him has to be doing the same physics experiments that the prodigy is doing, or writing poetry or whatever. But it needs to be appreciated, and there have to be some other kids who are doing it. Like I said, we're, for the sake of our children, moved to the island because they wanted freedom and nature, and now for the sake of our children, we're moving to the big city. I don't find that a sacrifice, because for the same reason I don't find it a sacrifice to sit with a baby and nurse him for hours a day, not be able to go without the baby tied to my body, or sleep with them and all of that. I don't find that a sacrifice. I find that to be the most wonderful ride on earth. You know, I'm riding with my children on what's happening with them, and it's not any different than running after your toddler wherever it runs, basically.
Never knocked. Every job I offer used to keep you at the dock. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked. I hate the army and I hate the RAF. I don't wanna go a
never knock. Every job they offer used to keep you at the dock. Career opportunity, the one that never knock. Never knock. Every job they offer used to kick you out the door. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked.